Welcome to episode 37 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
And on this episode, we've got a lot for you. We've got a big, big film. We're going to be reviewing The Revenant, starring Leonardo DiCaprio. And that's a big Oscar player. We're going to briefly touch on the Oscar nominations a little bit later on, aren't we, lads?
Yeah, I think so, as and when.
As and when. We're also going to be re-watching, and this is something I'm looking forward to immensely, Tim and Eric's billion-dollar movie. If you're not familiar with what this is, wait until we get to that section. I'll give you a bit of background detail before we launch into it. What's going to be our topic for the day, Mark? You picked our topic.
The top three films that are based on a true story.
Yeah, that's going to be
very intrigued.
Yeah. And Adam, what year are we skipping back in time to?
1993.
Indeed we are. And we're also going to be playing our next round of our amazing, hilarious new game show, Lost in Translation, which has been a big hit on the old social media, hasn't it, Mark? People have been loving Lost in Translation.
Seriously, Adam, kudos to you, mate. People are going crazy for it and testing people at work the next day and all this I'm reading about. So it's a big hit.
So yeah, round two with that. So let's get started.
So, chaps, to kick this episode off, topic time. Mm-hmm. I think this is quite an interesting one where I'm really looking forward to seeing what you guys have got. Ben, I'm going to throw it to you first. What's one of your best films that are based on a true story?
I'm going to go with an incredibly obvious pick. This is a film that is in my top five movies of all time, so I couldn't leave it out. Goodfellas.
Nice.
Martin Scorsese's gangster epic based on the true story of Henry Hill, who worked in the mob. Worked for the mob. He was played, of course, in the film by Ray Liotta. It's a brilliant film, a brilliant performance. Films always have, I don't know, they grab me more when I know they're based in reality. It gives it an edge. It's all well, you know, it's good enough when you watch a film and it's someone's come up with it in their own head. But when you've managed to create a brilliant film based on something that really happened, yeah. I just kind of invest more in it when I know that it's a real situation.
I also know you very well, and I know that after that you see a film that is real, you spend hours reading about it and all theories and people involved and everything else.
Always.
Yeah, I think we all do that, though. I think when you know something is inspired by true events, one of the things that I actually noticed about this topic, which I'm going to touch on in a bit, is you want to know, one, how much hyperbole there is involved in the screenplay, how much artistic license, how much dramatization there actually is.
Yeah.
And two, some characters that from this are actually really interesting people, so you do want to kind of go in depth and look at them a bit more.
Yeah.
Goodfellas, as you know, is a film that I hadn't seen until we started the podcast. If we ended this podcast today and that was that, I'd be very happy with what we've done, plus that I've seen Goodfellas.
That's what I'm like with Mac and me in the room.
Yeah,
thanks, Ben. You know, cheers, mate.
It's a damn good film, and I completely agree with that choice, Ben. I mean, it's great.
Yeah, I'm not going to say too much more about it. We've covered it many, many times on the podcast. That's my first pick, Goodfellas.
When you just started then as well, I was really looking forward to this topic because I know that I can't talk about The Thing. Adam can't talk about The Dark Knight.
What?
You can't talk about Blade Runner.
I can't.
So this is the first time.
Wait, what?
It's not real. I'm sorry.
I need to have a think.
Can we just go to Mark now? I'm going to go with my first choice. And it's a film that, of course, again, is one of those. It's not one of the best films I've seen. But it is a very good true story. It's a very, and there's two fantastic acting performances in it. Very recent, Dallas Buyers Club.
Nice.
Very good film.
And it's a very, it kind of puts into perspective a bit. And one of the things that these true to life event stories films kind of do, they really kind of open your eyes to the way certain people were treated and things like that. And this is one of those films that did that. When you look at the story of AIDS medication, how it was distributed in the UK. US, sorry. It's very harrowing, I think is probably the best way to describe it. And this film kind of gets that across but through two fantastic performances from Jared Leto, who is going to play the Joker in the Suicide Squad. See, he managed to bring Batman into it.
Nice.
And of course, Matthew McConaughey as Ron Woodruff.
Yeah.
And it's also about the ostracization that he gets. Is that a word? Ostracization? How he gets ostracized.
You convinced me.
How he gets ostracized from society and the people that he knows through the fact that they all believe he's gay because he now has AIDS.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a really good performance as well, isn't it? It was part of that year of the whole reconnaissance when he was doing that and True Detective. And
yeah, he had just finished. I think he'd come back with Mud in sort of 2012. Mm-hmm. This is the real kind of start of it.
Yeah.
And then, Dallas Buyers Club and True Detective.
Yeah, he's on a roll now.
Well, my first choice isn't from the 80s.
Wow.
And this is the first topic I've not picked a film from the 80s.
Good Lord.
So this film is by the multi-talented Steven Spielberg, Munich.
Great film. Yeah.
What the funny thing about Munich is everyone I speak to, apart from obviously my close mates, haven't never seen this film. And I'm always like, oh, you need to see it. And it's one of those films that then they come back, oh, thanks, Mark. I really appreciate that. What a film.
Oh, thanks, Mark. I just imagine that, like, queuing up to thank you.
Eric Bana for this film is one of his strongest performances, in my opinion. It's a beautifully shot film. It's quite a harrowing story. But I think you both agree, it's a work of art. Mm.
It's
stunning
a great
film.
And I'm always very harsh on Eric Bana because I remember him for Hulk.
Yeah, but I think he's great in that film. That film has its faults, many, many faults.
And
but
he's
I think
not
he was,
one of them.
I think he's very good in that film. And what happened to him? Because he had that era where he was in a lot of big films like Hulk and, you know, prestige picks like Munich. Even did that Funny People, that Judd Apatow film that was pretty big. And he's really good in that.
Star Trek as well, I
and
believe.
And Star Trek, he was the villain in the first one of the rebooted Star Trek franchise. But he's not really done anything since. The only thing I know of that he's in anytime soon is the new Ricky Gervais film that's like a Netflix film.
Oh, The Special Correspondent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I know he's in that, but he's not. I've not really seen him on the screen for ages. And he's a really good actor. Like going back to Chopper.
Yeah.
Remember how good Chopper was?
That's a unbelievable. Is that set on a true story?
It is, yeah. Mark Chopper Reed was a real Aussie gangster, yeah.
Yeah. So that's my first choice. Obviously set on the 1972 Olympics. Mm-hmm. The Israeli attacks were unbelievably choreographed. And I just think that's one of Spielberg's finest films that not everyone realises is a Spielberg film. It's not so obvious.
Yeah.
A bit like Bridge of Spies. It isn't obvious Spielberg, but when you watch it, you think, that's crafted and made beautifully.
And I think I said this when we reviewed Bridge of Spies, that I've always liked those historical films that Spielberg does. They're my favourite type of Spielberg films, especially Munich is a brilliant film.
He really takes you back to that sort of age as well.
Yeah, because he's a master, you know, he can pull all that sort of stuff off.
It was good choosing this as well because it made me rewatch this again recently and it must have been 5 years since I've seen this film and it was as good as I remembered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Ben, what have you got next?
Up next is a brilliant film that I've not seen in quite a while, actually. I think I need to rewatch it. And it was the first thing I ever saw Tom Hardy in. Bronson.
Oh, my Lord. That's a messed up movie.
It is this a messed up movie.
Was so close to making it into my top three.
It's so good, isn't it? So for those of you who don't know, it's a biopic based on Charles Bronson, who he's known as Britain's most notorious prisoner. He has spent the vast majority of his adult life in prison just because he's a violent nutcase. I probably shouldn't say that, should I? Oh, it's all right, he's locked up, he can't get me. But you've got Tom Hardy playing the titular character, and it's just a really out there, you know, balls-to-the-wall performance, leaving nothing behind. The film is by Nicholas Winding Refn, who did Drive, and Only God Forgives. Oh, God. and other things. And it's a brilliant film because it's not a straightforward film. They could have done a very straightforward, linear, chronological biopic of the man. But this film it's an art film, really. It's a really weird kind of avant-garde piece. Yeah. But it's a great film, and it's anchored by one of the best performances I've seen anyone give, let alone in Tom Hardy's relatively short career. Brilliant performance, brilliant, brilliant film.
I think one of the things that really impresses me about this film is they try not to be too... I think demonizing is probably the best word. They try not to make him too... It's not too serious.
Yeah.
There's elements of comedy, it's narrated with a bit of dark humour as well. And I think that really kind of gets the film going from a different perspective as opposed to just a standard biopic.
Yeah.
Which is always what really impressed me. And as you say, Tom Hardy is one of the finest actors, I think, around at the minute. We'll talk about him later on.
Indeed, when we get to The Revenant,
But in Bronson, he's just a class above.
He is so good. And apparently, the actual Charles Bronson has seen the film. I don't know if they're to sneak it into the jail or something, but he's seen it and he was really happy with it. He was very pleased with Hardy because apparently Hardy had met with him quite a bit before the film was made to sort of get to know him and get used to him. This is just going off on a tangent at the minute. One of the things that Charles Bronson is known for now is his art. He's known as an outsider artist. He does a lot of painting and drawing and whatnot. And through whatever means, he's able to sell these things you know, from prison. And my friend Macca is a big fan of his and a fan of his work, and actually bought one of his pieces. But then when Macca moved in with his missus, she, I believe, wouldn't have it in the house. So the piece of art from Charles Bronson that my mate Macca owns is now in my bathroom. He's allowed me to look after it. I've no idea how much he paid for it. I don't know that I've ever asked him. I don't know that I want to know the answer to that.
Yeah. Well, he won't tell you in case you're trying to sell it.
Yeah, short for money, mate. Get it on eBay.
Right, my choice then, my second choice. It's going to be a film that it kind of resonates with me a bit because I'm a big fan of the man himself originally. Walk the Line.
Oh, nice.
Joaquin Phoenix, biopic of Johnny Cash. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of Johnny Cash, have been since I was very young. And I think this film is a very in-depth portrayal of Johnny Cash's life. And I think Joaquin Phoenix, again, and one of the things that we probably are going to notice throughout this as well, is that we're going to be focusing on certain actors who play the lead characters. Mm-hmm. And as you did with Tom Hardy, I think Joaquin Phoenix is, again, one of the finest actors that we probably currently have working as well. Yeah. And he anchors this entire film brilliantly. And Reese Witherspoon as well, to her own credit, is fantastic as June Carter, later June Carter Cash. But the story of Cash's life and how he kind of evolved into the Man in Black was phenomenal. I thought it was a very good film. It's very well written. And one of the things that I was very much impressed with is the Joaquin Phoenix's voice.
Yeah.
In actually portraying some of Cash's songs as well.
So I will admit I haven't seen this film, which I know is terrible. I really do need to see this. So it was really him singing. They didn't just like loop over some real Johnny Cash.
It was actually
audio.
Joaquin Phoenix singing Cash's songs. Yeah.
Wow.
And it's really impressive, actually. He does a very good job.
He nails it.
I'm going to check that out then for sure.
Yeah, but it's a great film. And if you like Johnny Cash, you're a fan of that sort of era as well, because there's lots of people who overlap with Cash's life. Elvis has a role, small role in there. Jerry Lee Lewis, people like that, all from that sort of rock and roll era of American music. And some of the stuff they used to get up to on tour that's explained in the film is fantastic, and blowing stuff up and just the original kind of rock and roll.
Yeah,
it's really good fun, really great film, and some amazing acting performances as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, won a lot of Oscars, didn't it? Or it was certainly nominated.
It was nominated for a lot. I'm not sure how many it actually won in the end.
Check that out, Ben, because it's a good one to watch.
I will, yeah.
My next one is from 2007, directed by Sean Penn. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you guys have seen this, Into the Wild.
Yes, I have seen it. This is the one about the kid who goes out into the woods and then dies.
spoilers. It's a very, very good film.
I haven't actually seen it, and now I don't have to.
No. a really, really good film. The reason I chose it is, A, because it's so well directed by Sean Penn. I think he's done a great job of it. Mm-hmm. Cinematography is fantastic, but the soundtrack is all Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam. Mm-hmm. It's a really, really well-made, beautiful-looking film. Ben's pretty much told you what happens. But it's great. So it's filmed in, there's a lot of it, Alaska on there, and it's filmed beautifully. And it's just a really, really good story. So I know he's spoiled that, but go and watch it. Take it away with you. He'll go and do Walk the Line. I'll take hopefully something
from
you guys.
I want to take something from one of you guys.
But a beautiful, beautiful movie. And I didn't realise Sean Penn was that talented at directing. And
well,
kind of.
I'm amazed he found the time. See, I thought he spent all of his time interviewing on-the-run drug dealers.
Certainly that's the way the news will have you believe it right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. It's an interesting story because, again, I've not seen that film. But, again, I remember reading about it, and then I read up about the kid, the real kid, who just decided to essentially stop living in the real world and just go off and live in the woods and try and survive. And, you know, as I've already spoiled, he didn't. But he gave it a bloody good go.
But he's a really good actor as well, that kid. I can't remember his name.
It's Emil Hirsch, I think, is the main actor.
You're walking IMDb. I love it.
He just does his research.
It does the full research, yeah. That's me anyway. That's two down. One more to go. What you got?
My final one is a film called Zodiac.
Ah, right.
Have you both seen Zodiac?
I've got it down here.
Have you got it as well?
Yeah.
How good is Zodiac? I've already said how much I have a love for true stories. It just gives an extra something to me. I'm a real nerd for things to do with investigation, whether it's police investigations or journalism investigations. And this is both in one film. It's about the police and the journalist trying to hunt down the Zodiac killer. And I think it's the late 60s, early 70s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, spoiler alert, this is a real world thing, but they never caught him. And going back to your Into the Woods thing, I did spoil the end of the film, but it's also a true story. This kid really did die, so I've not really spoiled that much.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
But Zodiac, spoiler alert, they never caught him. But this film is brilliant anyway, and it contains so many good performances. Robert Downey Jr. is brilliant in it. Jake Gyllenhaal is brilliant in it. David Fincher, potentially the best directorial work he's ever done. I think the atmosphere, the sort of a noir atmosphere to this film that is just that pervades the whole picture that I just love. And it's a long, long film, and it's a slow slog of a film, but it's just a marvelous piece.
When we went to watch Nightcrawler, I think on the way back you'd said, oh, it's one of his best films. It's up there with Zodiac. And I was like, what's Zodiac? And I think you remember saying to me, oh, it's David Fincher. I was like, I've not seen this. Bought about 8 months, 9 months ago. I went and watched it.
Yeah.
Blew me away.
I'm not sure if you had it as homework, actually.
I think I did. On an official homework. Maybe, I'm going to check that out. But I was totally blown away by Gyllenhaal again in that. And again, David Fincher is just, his CV's... There's a couple of exceptions on there. Aliens.
I don't think Alien 3 was necessarily his fault, though.
Yeah, we'll let him have that one.
There's plenty of people we can blame for Alien 3.
But it's just got this kind of gritty look as well on the film. Mm. It's this slight colour tone to it, and it's just... It's beautiful.
There's an absolutely brilliant making of video that I presume was included on the DVD. So if you've got the DVD or Blu-ray, have a look on there. If not, it is on YouTube, that shows a lot of how some of the shots were composed. Like, I don't know if you remember, there's an aerial shot of a car winding around the street. Is it San Francisco where it's set?
I can't remember.
But there's an aerial shot of the car going around the streets. And when you watch the scene in the film, you just think it's an aerial shot of this car. But on this making of, they show you how much CGI went into the creating of this. And you didn't know it. It was so seamless.
It's one of those situations where the CGI actually looked good.
Actually, look, because you honestly didn't know. And, you know, it's not the sort of film where you'd expect there to be any CGI, but to create this one shot, they used a lot. So check that out, that making of. It's brilliant.
It's only the director's cut I've seen as well. I know that there's not often, you always hear about the director's cut that's out there somewhere.
Yeah.
But when I bought the Blu-ray, it was only the director's cut on there. So I'd be interested to see what was added.
Yeah.
Yeah, what kind of what they put in to try and, because you said, I mean, it's a long slog of a film anyway, so the director's cut must be.
Have you seen the film?
Sort of 3.5 hours.
I've seen it a long time ago.
Yeah,
and I mean a long.
Revisit
time. I think it came out about 2007, didn't it?
I don't know off the top of my head, but it's.
I think I watched it about 2009. Mm. So it's been a long time since I've seen it. And I remember it being a very long film as well. I think it's probably why I've never picked it up again in the last sort of six years or so. But no, I'll definitely probably give that another watch.
I remember I actually watched it once with my friend Paul, and I was saying to him how great this film was. I was like, oh, you're going to love this. You've got to watch this. And after about 20 minutes, he fell asleep. And I have never forgiven him.
Nope.
It's true, though. You shouldn't.
No.
Definitely shouldn't.
What's your last choice?
My last choice is... argue one of the finest films based on true events, Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Now I'm going to go with the film that Ben spoke about before. We've all spoken about it before. It's a great film. It's the film that's made Ben over here love Tom Hanks again.
Ah, yes.
Catch Me If You Can.
Big time.
Nice.
Based on the sort of true story, I imagine slightly dramatized as well, of Frank Abagnale Jr., a young man who becomes essentially one of the world's greatest con men. And frauds.
Yeah,
he follows his journey from, you know, faking being an airline pilot to a doctor to a lawyer, and essentially conning banks out of millions of dollars. I imagine towards the end of his career, and obviously his later incarceration, and then work with the FBI to in the counter fraud department. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic story. It's kind of a very good sort of comedy as well as a bit of a kind of true story drama situation. There's some very good moments in there. DiCaprio is brilliant. Hanks is brilliant. DiCaprio's the moment between them in the hotel room where he's kind of pretending to be a cop to Hanks, say, oh yeah, my buddy's already caught the guys over there, because he doesn't expect him to be such a youthful con man.
Yeah.
So he gives him that wallet, to his badge to look after, and he opens it up and it's got all the sort of food labels in there. It's a fantastic moment. I love this film so much. And the story itself, reading up on the actual story, as I'm sure we all did when we saw it, was very interesting.
Yeah, well, I've got Frank Abagnale Jr.'s book, Catch Me If You Can, that the film was based off. And it's a brilliant read, getting the further background detail. And you've mentioned there that he was a young man, a young con man. I think he was something like 19, 20 when he started running his cons. You know, these are the sort of high-level cons he was running. You'd expect him to be an experienced...
Yeah, like a 35-year-old man.
This was a kid. This was a kid just having a go, and by God, he was good at it.
But it's kind of DiCaprio portrays that that level of confidence I think Frank Abagnale Jr. had. One of the things I want to pick up on with you two now is when you were looking into this and trying to find out your best things based on true events, how many of these did you find that were so over-the-top dramatized that it was ridiculous?
Well, that's what they do, isn't it? As you said earlier, like dramatic license and whatnot. Hollywood likes to ratchet up.
Yeah.
You know, which I've never understood, because a lot of the time, you know, truth is stranger than fiction is the old saying. And a lot of times these stories stand on their own. They don't need to be embellished, but Hollywood, that's what they do. Embellishing is their game.
It's just, it's very interesting to read, because I was reading about a film, Cool Runnings, which is based on true events.
Oh, can I cancel my top three? Let's go with Cool Runnings.
But I was reading about it, because it's a film I always remembered as a kid, and it's obviously in the film, the East Germans are kind of the evil guys. They're the ones that don't really like them being there. They think they don't belong there. But in the actual, you know, true-to-life events, they lent them the sled that they competed in. So they turned these guys into really evil people, when in actuality they weren't. They were really nice.
To be fair, though, Germans. So I understood why they did it.
But it just made me laugh when I was going through the list. Because I found a sort of a Wikipedia list of films based on true stories. I was going down looking at how many I've watched and thinking, okay, and then reading about it afterwards and thinking, that's ridiculous. Yeah. That's nothing like what actually happened.
I'm sure there's one, I forget which film it is, but it's, I think it might be one of those that's, it's to do with like the breaking of the Enigma code. And in this film, they made it seem as though the Americans broke it rather than the fact that it was the British who broke it.
Rather than Alan Turing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's the sort of shit that happens all the time. even in Argo vastly minimised the help that the Canadians gave to the Americans. They made it seem like there was just one Canadian guy who let him stay in his back room. But it wasn't. You know, the Canadian government was highly involved in that. But again, that doesn't fit the Hollywood narrative. Hollywood doesn't want Canadians coming out looking good, do they? Screw that. It happens in every film, and all these true life films.
Do you want to hear what the guys on social media came back
Not
with?
Not really.
Philip Handers put Alive, which is a very harrowing film.
Oh, mate, I love that one. That's where they go cannibalistic on the hill.
It's really dark. Goodfellas and the Amityville Horror.
Nope. No, I'm sorry. No. Any film like Annabelle or Amityville that states based on... No, it's not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Wayne Saunders has put Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
Schindler's List.
Never seen it.
Erin Brockovich.
Terrible.
My mum took me to see that at the cinema because she was ill, and I said, oh, I'll go with you then, that's fine. I hated it.
One of my favourite things about that is Ben's review of all three of those films. He's basically, nah. Not seen it, no.
Becky Clare Nock has put A Beautiful Mind.
Yeah,
really good.
The Last King of Scotland.
Great film.
Never seen it.
It's a great film.
Oh, so good.
It's a great film, absolutely brilliant. Again, very embellished.
And Monster. Which is a very good film.
Yeah, the Charlize Theron film, yeah.
Kevin Bradley has put Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Big time.
More of a documentary, though, isn't it?
Yeah, we can't count documentaries in there.
Miracle.
Is that the ice hockey one?
I don't know. The only ice hockey film I ever care about is The Mighty Ducks. After that, I'm not interested. And Argo.
Yeah.
KO has put Rope, because it is based on a play and of a murder. She can have that if she
never heard of it.
Alfred Hitchcock's Rope.
Never heard of it.
Okay. Apollo 13.
Never heard of it.
And Catch Me If You Can.
See, I assume Ben would hate Apollo 13 because it was that time when Tom Hanks was doing anything for an Oscar.
I don't mind that one, actually. I quite like Apollo 13. It's really just Philadelphia and Forrest Gump I don't like.
Couple more. Jesse Lauren has put October Sky, which I've never seen.
Never heard of it.
Good Night and Good Luck, which I've never seen.
Very good film. Clooney. Yeah, I like that.
And The Conjuring.
Nope.
And finally...
Next year was at The Exorcist or something like this. It didn't happen.
Ghostbusters.
It was some bloke who was pretending to be possessed by a ghost. Well, he did something stupid, but he shat the bed or something.
Life's a Pitch podcast. I put Goodfellas, City of God, which is a marvellous film.
Yeah, really good.
And Anchorman.
I think that was based on a true story.
You're not having that.
Not so much. I'll tell you one that I very nearly had, but I didn't know if you guys would allow it or not. I very nearly had Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, because that is based on a book.
Is that the Hunter S. Thompson?
Yeah. It's based on a book that Hunter S. Thompson wrote that was based on a real-life drug-fueled trip to Las Vegas he and his lawyer took. But, you know, he embellished the truth to write his book, and then Terry Gilliam embellished the book to make the film. So it's about three places removed from reality. But I would still consider it based
In all fairness, if he was on that many drugs, he was probably three places removed from reality himself.
Big time.
So, must have had about 20 people on social media also say Fargo.
See, that winds me up. I know that the start of Fargo, it says, this is based on true events, but that was a joke. Yes. That was the Coens having
a
laugh.
It's like Blair Witch.
Oh, God.
You think they meant Argo?
Yeah. Right, next topic is Adam.
Yeah, it's my choice. So I realise that I've been selecting a lot of worst ofs recently. So it's time I did a top three best of again. So I'm going to go for what I want is your top three on-screen partnerships.
Nice.
So like, you know, couple two characters who interact a lot in films. Yeah.
Got already one in my head I'm definitely having.
You're going to have Adam Sandler and Adam Sandler in Jack and Jill.
That's a great one.
Yes, yeah, so it's your top three on-screen partnerships. So Billy and Gizmo.
Nice. Wayne and Garth.
Exactly.
Oh, stop, you're giving too many away now.
So there we go, boys. That's the topic next week.
Love it. We've been to our local View cinema to see The Revenant, the new film from Alejandro González Iñárritu, starring Leonardo DiCaprio as Hugh Glass. It's a true story, or based on true events, you know, sticking with the theme that we've already had so far in this episode, about a guy in the 1820s, I believe, called Hugh Glass, who was a frontiersman and a fur trapper. And it's about how he was out in the wilderness with his group of trappers and how he was mauled by a bear and then he was left for dead by one of his fellow trappers, played by Tom Hardy. And the film tells the story about how he manages to survive this bear attack, crawl his way back through the dirt and the snow, and then essentially hunt down Tom Hardy's character to get his revenge. And it is every bit as dark as I've just made it sound. A very, very interesting piece. The first film from Iñárritu since Birdman, which was the big player, won all the Oscars last year. And, of course, The Revenant has been nominated for a fair few this year, which we'll get to towards the end of the review, I'm sure.
Is that what he's doing? Is he just waiting a year and bringing out his film for Oscars?
Yeah, it makes sense. You know, put out a film sort of November, December, win a few awards, wait 6-7 months, pop out another one.
Yeah, have a couple of
clear
months
up.
Off, enjoy yourself.
Exactly, he's up for 12 for this.
Is it 12 that Revenant's got? Okay, well, I'm sure we'll touch on a fair few of those in a little bit. So let's throw it out there. Let's get some instant thoughts. Mark, when you came out of that cinema, what thoughts were running through your head?
Mind was blown. Mm. I've not seen anything of that sort of amount of depth and scale for a long time at the cinema. The films we've been seeing are pretty good, really good performances, but this is just out of the world, like literally out of this world. It was whatever those actors and that crew have put themselves through in the last 6 months must have been the most challenging times of their lives. And for me, I loved it.
Adam?
An endurance test. In every sense of the word. Yeah. Like, it's very interesting as a film. It's wonderfully directed. There's some brilliant performances alongside not a lot happening for long periods.
Yeah.
But the performances keep you hooked. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my instant. And as Mark said, the depth and the scale of the piece is phenomenal.
I think I'm with you on this, Adam, to be honest, more so than Mark. I thought the performances were fantastic, especially from DiCaprio and Hardy and Will Poulter as well, as one of the young trappers. I thought those three were great. I thought the film looked phenomenal, as good as a film will ever look. Wonderful direction, wonderful cinematography. But there was a whole lot of nothing going on for long stretches of the film. So I came away a little bit cold, I think. I think it was one of those films where I can appreciate and respect it more than enjoy it. That was my overall view on it.
Yeah, I think that kind of sums up my feelings on it as well there. It is an endurance test, as I said. Yeah. You sit there waiting for the payoff, and that's the whole point of the film. It's a wonderful story in the way it's told for that respect. And
yeah.
This is why this film is made by Iñárritu instead of Michael Bay.
Oh, Christ. Can you imagine?
Because it's not an action film. It's the story. It's the way the film needs to be made. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of... Because it's, you know, you're enduring... You feel like you're enduring what he's enduring.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. They're purposefully making it feel long for that reason alone.
And let's talk about that in what you're enduring. That comes down to two things. First of all, is the direction. The way Iñárritu directs a film, it's always up close and personal. You know, thinking back to that film, how many of those shots were sort of up close and personal one shots of, you know, one person zoomed in on their face that you felt like you were going through everything they were?
It's so much so that it's that close to them. You're seeing their eyes blink, their eyes shake, the coldness coming off their skin, you know, the actual paleness of being out in that cold. And I think that's what works so well, that you just summed it up perfectly. I forgot how much... There's probably not a shot away further than a foot from every face in the whole film, and it puts you there.
Yeah.
I'm standing that close to Leonardo DiCaprio thinking, shit, this is what we're going to do.
And the biggest, I think, identifier of that is the whole bear mauling scene. There is a scene that goes on for a good, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes of DiCaprio being mauled by this bear. He gets mauled by the bear, then left for dead, and then the bear comes back and has a round two at him.
Yeah.
And it's harrowing. It's amazing. And, you know, obviously there's a large element of CGI in it, but you wouldn't know it. You only know it because we know it wasn't a real bear. We know it can't be.
We know DiCaprio wasn't actually fighting a bear.
DiCaprio gets stuck in. He really did eat a bison heart in making this film, but he didn't actually wrestle a bear. So we know there must have been some shenanigans going on there, but it's flawless. But you're so close. You're so in it. You feel like you're being mauled by the damn bear yourself.
It looked so real. It was horrible. It was uncomfortable to watch. And it, like you said, it threw him about. It was obviously not going to be like a boxing fight. It just absolutely mauled him. And I've just kept looking, thinking, is it going to end now? Is it going to end? And like you said, those 4 minutes of that scene seems 20 minutes because it's absolutely beating the shit out of him, cutting him open. His wounds are all looking disgusting. And then you say, what? Round two? I'm coming back for some more. And I'm like, horrendous to watch. Horrendous.
Yeah, and on that note of kind of up close and personal, there's a scene where Fitzgerald, played by Tom Hardy, and Glasser, he's trying to sort of say, blink if you want me to kill you. And he's just trying to get him to blink so he can kill him.
Yeah.
And it's just literally zoomed in on the two of them. And it's just, even though DiCaprio doesn't say anything, really, he's just sort of going, because he can't talk. He's just... Oh, it's so intense.
No, that scene, the scene that you're talking about when you know, he, as you say, he can't talk because it's just after mauling, he's having to communicate with his eyes and his grunts. And that was the scene where I'm watching it thinking, if they don't give DiCaprio his damn Oscar this time, there is something wrong with the world. Because he's done a dozen fantastic performances. I wouldn't necessarily even say that this is his best one, but you look at that film and you go, there'd be something very, very wrong if they don't give him that goddamn gold statue, because he is just superb in this.
Yeah, I think he's his favourite to get it this year.
Yes, I would say so. I mean, he's got some stiff competition, but I think this is DiCaprio's year.
Yeah, for sure.
He's put his body through the most. When you look at the other performances, don't get me wrong, I fully respect Eddie Redmayne and stuff, and The Martian, Matt Damon.
Yeah.
But this guy's gone out there. It's not a CGI background in the middle of, you know, was it filmed in Canada?
Something like that.
Yeah, he's gone out in these conditions and lived it. And you know what he's like? He's a method actor. What are you laughing at?
I'm just laughing because when he said The Martian, Matt Damon, it made him sound like he had a cool nickname.
The Martian, a.k.a.
You know, I respect Eddie Redmayne and The Martian, Matt Damon.
That's his ring name.
But he's gone out there with the crew, and you know what he's like. He'll be living it, like you said, eating the actual...
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he ate a bison heart. And they had to do a hell of a lot of reshoots because Iñárritu, by all accounts, is a very demanding director, and there were a lot of falling outs on set. People were fired and left and couldn't handle his directing style. Because it was apparently what he didn't want was any fake lighting. He wanted everything to be light naturalistically, lit. But because of that, it meant they only had a small window per day to film, so the filming schedule overshot by a good couple of months. So, you know, DiCaprio has said that it's the worst thing he's ever had to do. You know, this punishing. They were genuinely out there in the cold and the snow and rolling around and eating bison hearts, for Christ's sake, and in nice cold water and stuff. And just give him the Oscar for that. give Tom Hardy the Best Supporting Actor Oscar as well, just for that.
I mean, that must have been what kept DiCaprio going. He must have been sitting there thinking, I'm getting an Oscar for this.
I better bloody do,
But it is, I mean, the performances, and you've just mentioned, obviously, give Tom Hardy the Best Supporting Actor as well, and let's talk about him a bit now as well, because he is phenomenal.
Yeah, very good.
As Fitzgerald. The scene where he's talking about how he got scalped...
Oh, God.
And he's going into details. Like, he didn't really feel anything until the blood started coming down his face. And so they've only managed to take sort of half of it off, haven't they? And,
yeah. Because I didn't realise at first, because I just thought he had a mangy head. I didn't realise until he told the story that he's supposed to have been half scalped. But it is an absolutely brilliant performance. And I didn't expect him to get nominated, actually, because he wasn't talked about a lot prior to the nominations coming out as being a likely nominee. So the fact that he got in over people like Idris Elba, who was highly expected to get in, But I think it's deserved. I think he is very good. You know, it's definitely one of the best things Hardy has done.
Yeah. And his interactions with Will Poulter.
The acting is phenomenal. Will Poulter, you've just mentioned, he's turning into a really good young actor, and I think he's going to have a big future. And I thought he was very good in this. And not a lot of people have talked about him. The reviews don't really mention him too much, but I think they should. I think he does a lot of understated work. Yeah. He's up against two Hollywood heavy hitters. That's why.
If there's going to be two guys to be on set with day in, day out to learn from.
Yeah, it's not a bad experience, is it? Yeah.
One thing about Tom Hardy I wanted to touch on is how good his accent was throughout this film. Because usually I'm not going to go into Bane and stuff. But
Mad Max.
He doesn't do it for me. But in this film, it was consistent throughout and I believed it.
That's the word, it's consistency. I don't know if the accent he was putting on was appropriate for the town in America he was supposed to have been from. I've no idea. But at least it was consistent.
Yeah.
At least for the whole 2 hours, 2.5 hours, whatever it was the same accent all the way through, which is rare from Hardy. So yeah, I agree. I liked his accent as well.
It must be pretty challenging as well. Like you just said about Mad Max and obviously Legend, it's a big year for him. Mm. But he's always been the main focus of the film. And in this, I know he's kind of up there, very close to the main, but when you get the script and you're like, oh, first day on set, right, who are you up against? Leonardo DiCaprio. You must be like, fucking hell, like, Jesus, this ain't going to be easy. But he pulls it off. Mm. You know, going face to face with him, like you said.
You could also be sitting there thinking, this is one of the top actors of our generation. I need to up my game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that happens more often than not. I think an actor is better when he's against other great actors. It ups your game automatically.
Jack and Jill's a great example.
Oh, big time. Sandler has never been better when playing against Sandler.
Himself, that's it, exactly.
And you throw Pacino into the mix. And Pacino's been opposite some of the great lead actors of all
course,
time.
Yeah,
but this time he's up against Sandler and Jack and Jill. Mm-hmm. It just elevates him to the next level.
With the Revenant, again, we talked about this when we did our Birdman review. The soundtrack and the score is so important, but it's so minimalistic.
Yeah,
you probably wouldn't buy it on CD and listen to it at home. It's just little bare drums or sounds of just the outside with atmospheric kind of just very low tones. But my God, it works perfectly. And in this, again, like it did in Birdman, it adds everything to every scene. And without it, it would be nothing.
I think having spoken about, obviously, how the soundtrack plays into that, I think that's part of the endurance as well, because it's so minimalistic, because it kind of comes in dribs and drabs. There are moments where it feels like, when that's missing as well, it can sometimes feel like there's more absence of event, should we say, going on. But I genuinely believe the endurance, the absence of events, and is a choice that the director made.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I think, and I'm willing to give him credit for that. I'm not going to hold it against the film that nothing goes on for a long period of the time.
No, and again, it's a true story. We've talked earlier how we don't like it when Hollywood embellishes. Yeah. So that they could have made it so he met a gang of bandits every 5 minutes, but that wouldn't be true to the reality of it.
Or Fitzgerald had a gang of bandits that he was hunting down one by one until he got
to. Exactly, because then all of a sudden you've got like a Tarantino film in your hands. Exactly. I think it was a conscious decision. And again, I don't hold it against the film or the director either. It just dragged a bit for me. But it was about one man versus nature. So as you said, because that one man, DiCaprio, was so magnetic, it kept you in the film. Whereas if it was anyone else, maybe a lesser actor, you might not have been able to stick with it.
I think one of the things that I just want to touch on now is that final sort of 10, 20 minutes where it is all happening.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
He meets Fitzgerald again. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Fitzgerald first meets Domhnall Hall Gleeson, the captain of the company.
Who's another one who's had a big year.
Another big year, and a great performance by lookouts, what he has to do as well, I think, for Domhnall Hall Gleeson.
Yeah.
He kills him and then leaves the body and goes off between the two of them, where he's got the axe and the knife. Is that one of the rawest fight scenes you've ever seen?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, they're just literally trying to hack bits out of each other. And it's that blood and snow effect you get again as well, which always looks good.
Yeah. I'd love to know how real and raw that was in filming, how much they laid into each other. Because as we've said, they were really going for it, eating bison hearts and rolling around in the snow and whatnot. I'd like to think they were actually contacting. Obviously, they weren't really stabbing each other, but
they were connecting.
They were really. It looked
very raw,
brutal.
And what's good about it is it's a very real fight. That's how people would fight. There's no whoosh, all these stupid sounds, or the fact that when he cuts him in the leg, he's down for 5 minutes. He's not just suddenly pulls it out and becomes a hero. Mm-hmm. He's absolutely in agony, and you feel it because there's not any music in the background. Yeah. They're just. That your pure focus is on those two and how much damage they're doing to each other and still going.
Yeah. And the shots in this fight scene as well are are amazing. There's a bit where I think towards the end, after he sort of stabbed him in the chest, they're both on the floor and he kind of hacks at him again with the axe, and then he starts sort of climbing up his body.
Because
Glass can't walk still. He's still struggling with his own injuries, and he starts sort of crawling up Fitzgerald and then starts sort of strangling him. And it
looks brilliant. The direction there is phenomenal. And we've also touched on a little bit how well framed the shots are and so on. And that obviously goes to the cinematographer, who I believe in this instance is Emmanuel Lubezki, who was nominated for an Oscar. And if he wins, which I think he probably will, that will be his third win in a row, I believe.
Wow.
He's doing some great... He's up against Roger Deakins for Sicario. And Sicario, as we mentioned last time around, was my favourite film of 2015. Looks brilliant. Deakins has been nominated for like 13, 14 Oscars and never won. So I want Deakins to win. So yeah, I think Lubezki will probably win it. And if he wins three in a row, you know, God, he's onto something.
Oh, it's a sign of class, really, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It shows how good you are in your field.
Yeah.
The thing is about The Revenant as well, I know we've seen, like, but it always felt like at times we'd seen a new shot that we've never seen before. And I know we've talked about the one on the back of the horse of the trailer. That really was amazing. And there was a few shots throughout the film where you've seen millions and millions of films, but you know that for some reason it just looks like you've never thought of, let's stick a camera on the back of this guy who's also on the horse. And it just puts you in a different frame of mind while you're there with him.
Yeah, when he's being chased by the Pawnee Indians, and there he's got that sort of shot from the side of the horse where he's riding, he's kind of looking back. It's great. I mean,
now Adam, when you were watching this film and they first mentioned the Pawnee Indians, knowing you as I do, did you immediately start thinking of Parks and Recreation?
I did immediately. I'll confess now, it's one of the reasons why I started watching Parks and Recreation.
But I think the opening shot is literally 10 minutes of just one panning left and right while this whole battle's going on.
Oh, then get to the bowl!
Yeah, and that's all you get. But for, like you said, it is very testing. You could be looking at your watch thinking, come on, I want to move. But it just works for me. It's just you're seeing stuff going on in the background that you didn't see on the first shot when it pans back left and then pans right again. But it just works. And that's what it's kind of his trademark now, isn't it? I think I think he's got his look and feel that's his, which is good work at this day and age.
Yeah, I mean, there's some fantastic shots, there's some fantastic scenes. It is a great film by all accounts. The bit where he's cauterizing his own wounds.
Oh, that's nasty. Yeah.
God. If you're ever stranded in the middle of somewhere,
gunpowder, isn't he? He's putting it into like his cuts.
Brutal. Shall we score? Yeah, I think we've covered all the bases. So, Mark, I think, you know, when we started out this review, it seemed as though you were going to like it more than the two of us. But I think we've all sung its praises. So let's give it a score, Mark.
9.
That, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the best thing I've seen in the cinema for a long time. And I think in a few years' time, I'll look back and own it on Blu-ray and keep watching it again. And it could be up at that as a 10. It could be perfect. I think what they've done, amazing.
That's going to be a big player come when we do our best films of 2016. I know. Then, maybe.
What a start.
For you, Adam.
Yeah, it's difficult because there were large parts of the film I enjoyed. There were large parts where I found it very testing to watch. Mm-hmm. I'd happily give it an 8.
Okay. I'm giving it a 7. Again, love the acting, love the cinematography and the direction. I found it a bit of a slog, a bit boring at times. So I didn't love the film overall, came out a bit cold. So it's 7 for me. So it would be 8 out of 10 overall.
Yeah, good start to the year.
Not bad at all.
Not bad at all.
Prize giveaway time.
Again? So, already?
I know, it's crazy. Last time on the episode, we had the opportunity to win a Creed pack. Not the guy...
The Christian Rock band.
Or not the guy from The Office.
To see them?
That would have been really good. Unfortunately not. It was for the new film, which I think Sly Stallone's up for an Oscar again, which is brilliant news.
Well-deserved Best Supporting Actor nomination, yeah.
Lovely to see. But the prize was a pack that you got a hat, you got a workout ball, you got a hoodie, T-shirt, you got the works. And the question I put out there was, who played Rocky? Does one of you guys want to have a crack at that?
You've already said it, haven't you?
Well, De Niro, was he Bullworker?
Genius. Sylvester Stallone. So we are going to send it out to Ian Dixon on Twitter, who got that right. Now, I've gone to Universal again, And I've got a surprise for film Ride Along 2.
Starring Ice Cube and Kevin Hart.
That's the one. Now, you get a T-shirt, you get a water bottle, a keyring, and one of the prize packs will also get a jacket.
Sorry, do you get a water bottle or a water bottle?
A water bottle.
You get a water bottle.
Get both of those. But the best thing is we've got five bundles of these to give away so that we can, you know, do this. I've had a lot of people coming up to me recently saying, your competitions are too easy. Your questions are far too easy. It's ridiculous. So we're going to take it up a notch this time, okay? To make an ice cube, what liquid do you use? It's also known as H2O. If you can let us know, it begins with W, let us know on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, email us, whatever you want.
Can I give them a clue?
Yep.
You put it in a bottle.
Yep. There you go. Let us know and we'll announce the winner in 2 weeks' time on our next episode. And hey, I'll probably have some more comps as well then for you as well.
Skip back in time, 1993. Thought I'd do a little kind of a voiceover bit there. Just say, skip back in time, 1993. How do you think? It's a good introduction?
It's pretty good. You ruined it by then explaining it. But yeah.
I know, but I felt a bit self-conscious.
I also like it when you say, like, skip back in time. I love this bit. It's probably my favourite part of the
show. Yeah, but I've really fallen out of love with it.
Oh, shit.
Ever since we got past sort of the Dark Knight, I've started not to like it anymore because I can't talk about it. But it's 1993 this time round. Mark, I think we can be quite confident we know what you've got.
Mm.
So I'm going to go to Ben first.
Okay. This is one of my all-time favourite films. I think it would probably nudge my top 10 list. And it's undoubtedly one of my favourite performances, probably in my top 5 performances. It's Michael Douglas in Falling Down. I love this film. I love that performance. Just the idea of a guy who is just sick of the shit that the world is throwing at him. So he decides to go on a rampage. You know, little things like he goes to the burger shop and he wants to get a breakfast, but he's 2 minutes late for the breakfast menu and they won't let him get a breakfast. Or, you know, like the air conditioning breaks in his car. Or he goes to the corner shop to buy some pop or something and it's more expensive than he expected it to be. So he just gets hold of a baseball bat and just whomps everything in the store. This says more about me than it does about the film.
It does.
But I empathise with him so much. I just look at that and think, yeah,
But me and Mark know you quite well. And yeah, we could see this being you one day.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just about to ask him to go and get us a can of Coke from down the road. I'm not now.
If it's any more than 30p, well, I'll be furious.
Well, Mark, do you remember that time we were in that reputable fast food chain and Ben was eating his food at the counter? They closed the restaurant part for the night and they kept telling him not to eat at the counter.
This was ridiculous, right? So they have a rule in this reputable restaurant that Adam's just mentioned, whereby after a certain time you can't eat at the counter. You can't eat in the restaurant. It's takeaway only. So I was served first. Adam and Mark were behind me in the queue. I was waiting for them to be served, just casually eating the chips out of my bag. And the Jobsworth security guard tried to throw me out. So I, quite rightly I think, went nuts at him.
Yeah.
It's not as if I was some chavvy kid who was like, no, I'm going to stay and eat my food here because I can do what I like. No, I was casually standing at the counter waiting for you two to get your damn food. How am I in the wrong for that?
No, and
honest to God,
justified.
Falling Down, man. That film.
And if he had baseball bat at the time.
Oh, that film is my Bible. It's no surprise that the Punisher is my favourite comic character. You know what I mean? This is the kind of right-wing nut job I apparently am.
You're like a very chilled out Larry David.
Chilled out?
Sorry, okay, Larry David's a very chilled out you.
Oh, right.
But yeah, that was a very testing time, and I even spat my Big Mac out. Whoops, oh well. Worst thing is, they're open 24 hours.
Yeah.
So what do you want me to do at like 1 minute past midnight? Oh, I suddenly have to stand up out of my seat and not be allowed to eat. Why keep it open?
I don't know.
Ridiculous. I can see it. I can understand that. But what a great film.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's ever matched a performance up there.
I don't think
he has. That was it.
That is the best Michael Douglas performance, I think, full stop.
I just think it's fantastic how it is your Bible. This is how you live your life.
Honestly, because I look at him and go, God damn, that... So much about the world winds me up every single day. But you can't just go nuts with a baseball bat because, you know, civil society says you can't. But he doesn't care. He just goes nuts. And I just love it so much. I can live vicariously through him.
Come on then, Mark. What you got?
Jurassic Park.
Oh, what a surprise. No, I've got it as well. Same. I love Jurassic Park. I looked through 1993 because I tried to find something different that I thought was my favourite film, but nothing compared to Jurassic Park. So come on, Mark, tell us why.
The best part about this, my parents took me to see this when I was 11 at the cinema, which is, my parents used to take me to see stuff like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids 2 and Shite. Like, they took me to see a film called...
What's that? I've not seen
They
that
took
one.
Me to see a film when I was a kid called Men at Work. Have you ever seen this film?
No.
It's the worst film.
Are you sure they didn't
ever
just like take you to a building site?
Yeah, Mark, it's a film. 3D. You sit there.
And they took me to see really bad films. Like, fair play, they took me to see Back to the Future 3, but they did take me to see Jurassic Park. And as a kid at 11, it was one of the scariest experiences of my life. When you first see the T-Rex and the glass of the water, that film is a masterpiece. And you will look at it now, and it doesn't look like it came out in 93. No way.
No.
No bloody way did that come out sort of 23 years ago. Is that right?
Good God, it is 23 years
now. That's insane. And I'm sorry, but Jurassic World...
Boo.
With all this money and extra budget that they didn't... It just didn't work. It just didn't capture that.
This is what animatronics does, though.
Yeah.
Like, instead of just having CGI everywhere, it makes things feel less dated, and Jurassic Park is the prime example.
Yeah.
But I completely agree with you. I mean, Jurassic World came out last year now, and you get the feeling that in a few years' time, that's going to look dated.
Yeah.
Yeah, because CGI moves on.
Yeah.
You know, you'll look at a film in 1 year and you think the CGI is great. You know, I'm sure when Matrix 2 and 3 came out, people thought the CGI looked good at the time. Now we can see with the benefit of hindsight that it's garbage.
Yeah.
And that might be the case with Jurassic Park, whereas you say the animatronic, it has a realism to it. They seem like these genuine lurching beasts. Mm-hmm. That's why it doesn't look dated.
And it is a fantastic film. I'm right up there with you. I mean, I was 5 when this film came out. So I didn't get a chance to watch it until it probably came out on VHS, believe it or not. About a year, probably 2 years later, actually, back then. I think VHS release schedules were so in the future of when the films actually came out. So I probably didn't see it until about 95, 96. So I'd grown up a bit, but I just remember being absolutely frightened by these great big lumbering dinosaurs. Even the sort of Brachiosaurus that kind of sneezes on them in the tree. I think I was even scared by that when I was about 7. But it's a great story. And the raptors in the kitchen.
The whole kitchen scene is brilliant. And that's what we discussed this when we reviewed Jurassic World. But the thing that Jurassic World lacked for me was peril. There was no peril in any of the scenes. Whereas that kitchen scene was pure peril. You know, you believed those kids were going to get eaten by those velociraptors. It was a terrifying scene.
They were in trouble. There was no way out as far as you were concerned. And it's one of the best films of that year for me by far.
All the actors are great as well.
Yeah.
Like I love that.
Sam Neill, Jeff Goldblum. Yeah,
the really large guy that has the...
Jeff Goldblum's chest.
What's his name? The large guy that's... he gets the whole that attacks him. That
is it. Wayne Knight,
is that his name? He puts is that his name? He's in Gremlins as well.
He's got the glasses and the curly hair.
Yeah, it probably is.
I think it's Wayne. He's also is in Seinfeld.
Loved
him in that. Loved his character, how sort of arrogant he was, but he had no right to be. And he's just very, very funny. But it's just, even the kids were quite cool. I know you hate kids, but...
The kids in Jurassic Park 1 are fine.
Yeah.
It's kids in Jurassic Park 2 that I hate. The little gymnast bitch.
But yeah, it is a masterpiece. And
it is a masterpiece.
You know, it's that film that in 10, 20 years' time, I want to sit with my kids and go watch this, and I'm hoping that they love it as much as I do. It's classic.
It'd be amazing that those kids will be brought up entirely on CGI films.
Yeah.
And then they'll be sitting there like, Dad, were these dinosaurs actually alive 4 years ago? No, that's, we didn't use CGI back then, and that's why it looks so good.
And I think you and I, Mark, because we were about the same age when we saw this, I think we were at the golden age to see it as well. Not only because it was a great film, we were young and just starting to go and see blockbusters. But I don't know about you, but when I was sort of 9, 10, 11, I bloody loved dinosaurs.
Yeah.
I thought they were the coolest goddamn thing on earth. Like, I'd get to school, they'd make me read about all this shite that I didn't care about. But as soon as I could read about dinosaurs, I was in.
That was it.
So the fact that this film came out that was brilliant and about something I was really interested in anyway, I was like, I'm sold, I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, I was 7 or 8 or so, and I was, dinosaurs had... were kind of just in my generation through sort of Power Rangers, because all of their all of their big dinosaur bots were there. And my brother John, who you both of course know, used to get that dinosaur magazine every week, you know, where you could get the little bits and build up the stegosaurus and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He used to get that. So, you know, I grew up, and when you're growing up, you want to be like your brothers generally. So I was really interested in dinosaurs like he was. So yeah. it was just a great time, I think, for dinosaur based films, but that's boring, so I don't know why.
Do you still want to be like John?
Yes.
Do you still look up to him?
Still look up to him a lot. Still want to be doing what he does.
Aren't you forgetting on a Sunday afternoon on ITV, The Dinosaurs, that TV show?
Yeah.
Not the mama. What a great show that was. That was brilliant.
Yeah. I like that show. That was a really odd show, wasn't it?
I hope it comes on Netflix or you can get it on DVD again, because I'd love to. I watch one episode and be like, this is shit, I'm not watching it. But I used to watch The Grandma, you know, the real, like...
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it led to a resurgence in The Flintstones, which eventually got their own movie as well.
All right. There you go.
Do you want to hear what the guys on social media said?
Yeah.
It was a very good year. So we've got Fran, which is at Fran I Elizabeth. Groundhog Day.
Great film.
Amazing.
My dad's favourite film. Anders Holmes, Dazed and Confused, which I think you watched for homework, did you? Or not? With Ben Affleck walking around.
Oh, yeah. It was rubbish.
It was not. It's very good.
Because it was you who made me watch it, wasn't it? Terrible.
Ben Fenyon said he was going to say Groundhog Day, but he's going with Army of Darkness because two Bruce Campbells is always good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a stupid film, but
you mean Captain Supermarket?
James Howard's put, I know Cliffhanger might be a shit choice now, but I've watched it too many times as a kid to now turn my back on it.
I love that film.
Cliffhanger's like awesome.
Yeah, Sliced Alone, John Lithgow.
I like the fact that he's just bought into it.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I've spent too much time watching it.
Yeah.
Even if no one else believes it, it's going to be good. It's got
to
be good.
Committed to it now.
And the final one, which I thought Ben was going to choose, by Sally White, A True Romance.
A True Romance? never heard of it, but it sounds lovely. Is that like a Shakespeare?
True Romance. I really thought you were going to say that.
Do you know, I'm sort of lukewarm on that film. I enjoy it, but it's never been one that's got anywhere near my favourites list or anything.
Fair enough. So next time, it's 1992.
Edging closer to the 80s.
Mark is cannot wait for the 80s.
I'm just starting to get movement in my pants. Just. It's just slightly there. Blood's getting there. Anyway, yeah, stick around for more updates on my erections.
Shrimp can help you achieve premium body health.
Shrimp.
So, our rewatch this time round. Now, usually for rewatches, we go with a classic or an old film that has a lot of weight to it or something. This time round, we've gone for Tim and Eric's Billion Dollar Movie. And for those of you who didn't listen last week, I want to give you a bit of background on this. Tim and Eric, Tim Heidecker and Eric Wareheim, are an American comedy duo. They are a very surreal, odd couple of men who I find entirely hilarious. Not everyone agrees with me. They are very much Marmite comedy. Some people cannot see anything remotely amusing about them. They've done a show on American TV called Tim and Eric, Awesome Show, Great Job, which you can find, I think most of it's on YouTube. I think you can find it legally or elsewhere. And I love it, but I know a lot of people who don't. They also then did this film, Tim and Eric's Billion Dollar Movie. I put this out to you two guys last time around because I knew that neither of you had heard of Tim and Eric, so wouldn't have seen this film. So this really was me fishing. It's a fishing expedition. I want to know not only what your thoughts on this film are, but what your thoughts on these two men as comedians are. Obviously, I'd seen everything they'd ever done, so I was coming at it warm. Mark, I believe, before watching the film, you actually went and watched all of the TV show as well, to give you a bit of background.
Most of it. I'm on about series three now, but I'm working my way through them as much as I can.
Adam, did you do any sort of background, or did you go in cold with the film?
Well, I was actually going to watch the show,
but
decided not to, because I thought it'd be better if I didn't.
Okay, so we're all coming at it from completely different angles. It's fairly obvious that I like this film or else I wouldn't have picked it. So I'm going to throw it out to you first then, Adam, as coming into it cold. Tim and Eric's Billion Dollar Movie. Thoughts?
I actually thought it was really funny.
Yeah!
I've seen Eric Wareheim in a few other sort of more bit parts in comedies over the years. And whenever he's been in something, I've actually found him quite funny anyway. Mm-hmm. So watching the film when it first started, I was like, oh, I know that guy. So it's just, it's so weird.
Yes.
But
yes, it is.
I guess I'm just quite a big fan of that weird comedy. I mean, the stuff out there, you know, like you mentioned last week, Vic and Bob and mm-hmm. the Mighty Boosh and stuff, which I've always been a big fan of. And it's that kind of surrealist comedy that I think really kind of resonated with me. And there's a bit right at the start of the film where they've actually made this movie for $1 billion.
Yeah.
And they're showing it to the studio. And it's just the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen.
Just to flesh that out, to give you a background for those of you who don't know, the film is about Tim and Eric playing themselves. They've been given $1 billion to make a film. They make this film that is about 3 minutes long and stars a Johnny Depp lookalike. The studio then decides that they've wasted their money and want to basically kill them. So they then run off and decide they need to make the money back. So they open up a shopping mall, or they take over a rundown shopping mall because they believe this will then enable them to make $1 billion to pay the studio back. It's one of the wackiest, weirdest things I've ever seen.
And let's not forget the makeovers they've had. Oh, they look completely ridiculous.
They do.
It's got a long bit of a goatee bit.
It's absolutely brilliant. And Mark, going on to you then. So you came at it warm. You'd watched a bit of the show, and I believe you enjoyed the show?
Yeah, I did. I thought the YouTube series, they're only 10 minutes each episode, aren't they? Yeah. So they're very bizarre. We've even got Tommy Wiseau in one episode, so yep. I was loving that. I'm surprised how many big names they do get involved in this series.
John C. Reilly is in a lot of their episodes and stuff.
Will Ferrell and people, which obviously you love. Mm-hmm. This film is the most stupid waste of money, ridiculous, bad film ever made, but I liked it a lot.
No, you're going to say that.
And that's exactly it. I shouldn't like it. It is stupid. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I guarantee if I had 10 of my friends with me, all of them would say, this is shit, turn it off. We're not watching this wank. But for some reason, because I like stuff like Brass Eye and Jam and all these weird, bizarre things, I was sitting there chuckling away, and we'll get to the scene in a minute. But a few of the little points I wanted to make. The cock piercing scene is absolutely disgusting.
Because you see it.
It's absolutely gross.
You see this big, what I assume was a fake phallus, getting like a Prince Albert through it.
Yeah, and it's very... We talked earlier in The Revenant how they go very up close and capture that whole feeling. They did this with the cock shot because it was very, very close. I've then got, when Adam just mentioned then about they had this like makeovers, the scene where they actually get their hair cut in the bath together. What the hell was that all about? 10 minutes of them rubbing each other quite seductively in a half full bath, and it's just ridiculous. And it was absolutely insane. But we need to mention it now. Yeah. Premium Body Health, Shrimp.
Now, last time round, I said to you guys, one word, I'm going to give you one word when you see this film, Shrimp. Now, Mark, tell them, what was Shrimp?
Basically, you get in a bathtub, and it's, I think, 8 boys are around sort of 9 to 10 years old.
Yep.
They sit on the edge with their back towards you and basically shit all over you.
Yeah.
It's but like it's for premium body health.
For premium body health, a bath of diarrhea.
I'd just like to point out as well, at this point, during this scene, it's kind of intersliced with...
The sex scene, isn't it?
Yeah, the sex scene.
Yeah.
So it's just this really weird parallel of things that are going on.
And that sex scene, she's quite old, that woman.
Yeah.
And they're really full-on snogging and like... I think she's tossing him off or something.
Well, no, she's bumming him with like a dildo.
Oh, that's it. Oh yeah, that was it. Yeah, tossing him off.
Yeah, they're in this kind of weird sort of sex shop and they're pulling stuff out.
Really disturbing. So both of these scenes are very disturbing. You're trying to think which one is worse. But I've got down here, we talked earlier about how good this bear attack was in The Revenant and so perfect. The wolf attack in this film, in the mall, it's the most fake, cuddly toy you've ever seen. Sellotape to his neck, throwing him up and down. And I'm sorry, but if we're now going to talk about serious topics, I wish I could go back and replace the best fight ever, because this would make my... the fight scene with the music that sounds off something like Rocky or something.
Yeah.
My God, that was incredible. Absolutely unbelievable. I think
Mark's kind of summed it up really well by saying this is the worst, awful, baddest movie ever made.
Yeah.
But for some reason, it's just funny.
I know.
I don't know how they got the green light for it, really. Because I know the series is a YouTube sensation. Mm. They get quite a lot of people.
Well, it's only on YouTube now. Yeah. But it was on an Adult Swim in the US. So it was televised.
Yeah.
But yeah,
the audience, was it that big that they could fund this film?
I've got a feeling.
Adult Swim in general generally has quite a big following, though.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's very cult. But I think they actually might have done a Kickstarter or something. I believe they might have sort of self-funded that kind of way. And I know it's called Billion Dollar Movie, but it was clearly made for about £8.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was not a Billion Dollar Movie.
Well, see, that's what I've got to mention before I forget. The end when they shoot the kid. Just throw him up in the air and just randomly shoot him. His head explodes. Fucking horrendous.
It ends up that this that these guys who run the movie studio come down on this shopping mall at the end. This is the final scene. And pretty much all of the main characters, except for Tim and Eric, get shot to death. But then, of course, the crux of it is none of this happened. All of this was a film that they've now made and are showing to Steven Spielberg, who declares it the best film ever. It's not actually Spielberg.
I'll
it's
tell
a Spielberg
what, that's
look-alike.
A bloody good look-alike.
He does look a lot like him. Like the Johnny Depp look-alike looks a lot
really
like him.
Really does.
As well.
But it's disturbingly enjoyable. Mm-hmm. You can hear this from us. We're laughing now. But I don't know what the fuck it was all about. No. It was ridiculous. And Will Ferrell, I mean... Again.
And John C. Reilly.
Yeah. John C. Reilly, when he's dying.
Taquito.
His death scene, man. He kept shooting him. Shoot him again. Go on, shoot
why
him in the head.
Why don't you shoot him in the head? I want him to have an open casket.
Yeah, I can still feel my legs. Brilliant.
I think my favourite line in the film is when they first open up the shopping mall, they do like an infomercial that goes out. And one of them is saying about, oh, my dad said it's the best mall in the world. Oh, you don't believe what my dad says? Well, don't fucking come then. That's their advert.
Some of the theme tunes they come up with as well, and the backing music and stuff, they're just bizarre. It does remind me a bit of like Flight of the Conchords. It's a bit mental.
It's a bizarre film, completely all in. It's just, it is all in as well. They just decided every idea that they probably couldn't get signed off with Adult Swim to do on their show.
Yeah.
They've just decided to throw into this film.
Probably.
But it's just, it's ridiculously funny.
Yeah, it is. It's laugh out loud funny. And half the time you're laughing at it because it is funny. And the other half you're laughing at it because you're thinking, how are they doing this?
Yeah.
Why, how are they getting away with this?
And why?
And why? Why would they even, how have they come up with this? How is it that their brains work to produce this? It's absolutely brilliant.
Did it do well?
No. I don't think it was ever theatrically released. No. I think it was just released on video on demand.
God.
So it would have been, you know, cult, you know, it would have been fans of the cult show in America who would have paid, I don't know, $8 or something to download
but it had a big following, though, in America. There's a lot of people that did like it.
Oh, yeah, but it's cult, it's niche. Yeah. But the fans of Tim and Eric are diehards, as I count myself among them.
I prefer the series, now I've been watching it. I think that was really well done, and the 10 minutes are really snappy and short, and that they're so bizarre. The Tommy Wiseau episode is all about... a character he's come up with. He directs the actual episode. It's called Pigman. And he just walks in a room going, I'm Pigman, and just walking around weirdly and kind of just snorting to himself. It's weird. It's very bizarre. And I've read a lot of fans on like comments on YouTube stuff like, the film's shit. They should have stuck to more like this. But I don't. I think it just... How would you do that as a film, those little sketches?
Well, I love the film and I love their sketch work. I think the reason why the fans... tend to prefer the sketch work because it came first. And these 10, 11-minute episodes from Adult Swim have sort of 5 or 6 sketches in each. So to then take one premise and elongate it for a 90-minute film is a different kettle of fish. I love both. But Adam, definitely go and seek out the series.
Oh,
and
I'm going to. I'm already making a point of doing so.
Oh, definitely. There's so many great things. Like John C. Reilly is in the series and he plays a character called Dr. Steve Brule, who's like their resident health expert, and his health advice is... mental and insane and just
more mental than shrimp.
Yes. At times, yes. But yeah, go and watch some of that. And I just love them. I think they are insane men.
What are they doing now? Because they've finished at series 5, haven't they?
They're doing a show at the minute in the States called Tim and Eric's Bedtime Stories, which I've not seen any of because it's not available in the UK yet. But I've been led to believe that it's kind of League of Gentlemen-y.
Oh,
it's
my
like
Lord.
Each episode is they're separate stories.
Yeah,
like it happened like freaky little things. And I've from what I've read on the internet, it's very sort of League of Gentlemen, which I think
that's intriguing.
Like. Yeah.
Fair play to them. But they're not going to make another film.
Well, they've actually said that they want to make Tim and Eric's $1 trillion movie, which I would watch. Hands down, I'd watch that.
Oh, I think I would as well now.
I don't think we can pick anything more bizarre as another rewatch. I think this is the one that's... We've done silly films like Troll 2, and we've done this and done that. This is just... I've never seen anything
like it.
It's
a whole other kettle of fish.
Ever.
Yeah.
Completely. It's batshit.
Please, anyone out there who's listening... Even if you think this sounds awful, you know, don't take our word for it. Just go and find out for yourself. Watch the film. Make your own mind up. You might think it's the worst thing ever. You might bloody love it.
Let us
know. Just give it a go. And let us know. Yeah, get on the Twitter. Get on the Facebook and whatnot. Mark, what are the addresses?
At STTU Podcast on Twitter and Facebook / Skip the End Podcast. I did actually put it out just to see, and you've, I think, said last week it was a Marmite movie.
Big time.
Listen to this. So Pat and Jason Podcast put, it is unspeakable act against humour and a waste of fucking time. John Holbrook put, yes, best movie ever. Adam Downing put, utter toss. Seriously, boys, utter toss. I feel your pain. And Jessica Swift put, lovely stuff. Thought I was the only person that knew about this movie. So that sums it up.
Exactly.
That is perfect. Exactly. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let's score it.
Let's score it. Well, as it was my choice, I'll throw it out there first. Me, again, we've had a few of these recently, like really good, solid comedy films, and I've been giving them all the same score, which is 8. And I'm going to go with that again. This is a solid 8 out of 10 for me. There's no... The story is nonsense. It's just surrealist craziness, but I love every second of it. It's 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm a fan of it. I enjoyed it. It was very funny from my perspective. Mm-hmm. As a film, I don't think I could give it higher than a 6. So I'm going to give it a 6.
Yeah, I'll agree with you. I like it, but I can't be looking on the website and seeing stuff I've scored higher than this. But that's still a 6.
That's a good 7.
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
7.
So Tim and Eric's Billion Dollar Movie overall, 7 out of 10.
Right then, guys, it's my choice for the rewatch.
Yeah.
I just want to put it out there, right? There's a lot of new listeners that have jumped on board, and we really appreciate you listening. We have no idea what we set these guys up with each time. So if you're listening and these guys, when they hear what the title is, it's the very first time that they found out what the rewatch is. And that's what I think people don't realise.
Yeah.
So listen to this, boys. It's award season coming up, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Just around the corner.
We're in it.
And I want to pick a film right now that has got and won 9 awards.
Are these Razzies, minor chance?
Yeah. 6 of these are Razzies. Oh, it God. Won Worst Picture, Worst Actor, Worst Actress, Worst Director, Worst Screenplay, and it even came back later on and won a Worst Comedy of the Last 25 Years as well.
Oh, good God.
The year was 2003. It also ties up nicely with the new Batman and Superman film because we get Ben Affleck. Any guesses?
Is it Daredevil?
Geely.
There we go.
Oh, Christ.
On the next episode, we will be watching the... It's about time we watch some shit again. And I've heard this is utter, utter terror. Have you seen it?
I didn't even know it was a comedy.
Have you guys seen it?
No.
Right, next episode.
Geely.
That theme tune can only mean one thing. The greatest ever, ever, I'll put it out there, game show, Lost in Translation.
I feel under pressure this week. Because, this is my game, so I lose it.
So, coming off the back of a defeat, it was close, I got better. Yeah. We got down to the last thing. Ben beat me, fair play, well done.
Always.
Move along.
Shame.
Do you want to give the people a little idea of what the game entails?
So, Adam came up with this idea that... You know, when films get translated overseas and the cinema, there's a lot of films that really do lose its kind of appeal, I'd say, in their titles.
Yeah, so... the titles just change to a certain degree.
I think the best example you said on the last episode was Sixth Sense, which translated to...
He's a Ghost.
And where was that? Was that the Chinese translation?
Yeah, when it translates to Chinese and then back to English, it becomes He's a Ghost.
Spoiler alert.
If you missed round one, go back to last episode and listen, because it is very, very amusing and, you know, it's quite surprising how some of these titles turn out.
Some of them are surprisingly literal.
Yeah. So it's my turn to be Games Master. It's Ben versus Adam. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of pressure on Adam. It's his game. Ben? To go 2-0 up on this would be a massive achievement.
Yeah.
To make it fair, fastest hand up, who wants to go first? Right, that was Ben. Listen,
I'm the challenger, so I'll let him go first.
Oh, cheers. Anyway, that's fine. So, the first one we have, Run, Run, Cloudzilla.
Run, Run, Cloudzilla.
That is the title.
Run, Run, Cloudzilla.
Yep.
Twister.
1-0, well done.
Yes!
That wasn't easy. Question 2 First one for Adam. Because she's ugly.
Never been kissed.
One all.
Oh, we've seen that
one. This is the greatest start ever. Ben. Mm. Bloody oil.
There will be blood.
Brilliant. 2-1.
Yeah, I knew that one. Mm.
Are you ready for yours? My poor little angel.
My poor little angel.
Yeah.
I don't know. No, we have to pass.
Home Alone.
I love how it, like, they've made it seem as if the parents care that they've left their kid alone, which they clearly didn't because they did it twice.
Ben.
Yeah.
One Night, Big Belly.
Oh Christ, what could that be?
I think I know this one as well.
Oh, no. One Night, Big Belly. Is it going to be something to do with pregnancy?
I'm not going to give any spoilers or clues.
Oh, I'm going to say it's the Santa Claus.
Nope. Do you want to have a guess?
Knocked Up.
It is.
Oh dear. He doesn't get a point for that though.
No. One for you now, Adam. Friends for Always. Not easy.
It's not easy. Friends for Always.
Friends for Always.
Friends with Benefits.
Grown-ups. Ben.
Yeah.
Action Skyscraper.
Oh, Christ. Action Skyscraper. King Kong.
Die Hard.
Oh, God. Oh, that makes sense. Shit.
Are you ready now, Adam? It's free. What's the score at the moment? 2-1.
2-1.
Two, one, yeah. Free. Right, question four. Third one. Ready. Ready. An uneven couple.
Twins?
I love you, Philip Morris. Ben. Food General Mobilization.
What?
Food General Mobilization.
Food General Mobilization. I can't even hazard a guess at that.
Ratatouille. Adam. Help, my pretend boyfriend is gay.
Oh dear.
Christ.
I'm just trying to think of a film where that's partially the subject matter.
I'm sure there is one. I can't remember what it's called, but I know of one. I'm sure it's like some Julia Roberts shit or something like that.
Probably. She does everything else. No, we have to pass on that.
My Best Friend's wedding.
Yeah, it's Julia Roberts, isn't it?
That's a massive. Yeah. I think it's Cameron Diaz as well.
Oh, could be.
One last each.
If you get this, you win.
The happy dumpling to be.
Start again, sorry.
The happy dumpling to be who talks and solves problems.
The happy dumpling to be who talks and solves problems. I haven't got a clue what that could possibly
be. Do you want to
guess?
I've no idea.
Babe.
Now, hold on.
The happy dumpling to be.
I don't know what country makes dumplings out of pigs. And what problems did he solve?
A lot. Final one. You need to get this.
Pressure's on.
Imaginary dead baseball player lives in my cornfield.
Field of dreams.
Oh, that's so easy.
He's got it.
Oh.
So it's one all.
Yeah.
Now, as we did last time, which I loved, was it... Sea of Teeth or something, was it?
Yeah, they're teeth from the sea.
Brilliant. I'm going to pick one here, and it's the first one to shout out. Electronic murderer.
Electronic murderer?
Electronic, Blade nope.
Unfriended?
Nope.
The Net?
Nope. Ben has a poster of it.
Tonight 2.
He's done it. He's won.
Yeah. 2-0, baby.
So on the next episode,
me and you for the wooden spoon.
Yeah, and just a bit of pride.
That's gone. Long time ago.
Stick around for the best thing Adam's ever come up with. Lost in Translation. Another episode, another round of listener questions. The Retro Critic, your favourite David Bowie movie? Obviously,
The Prestige.
Prestige.
The Labyrinth. Very sad to see him being taken from us, but...
Yeah, it's been a crap year so far.
Alan Rickman dead as well.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It's horrible. He's also asked another question. What is the worst sequel that hasn't yet been released?
I don't know.
Well, I don't have clairvoyant powers, so I couldn't possibly tell you.
I have no idea.
Let's say Star Wars 56.
Yeah, that's going to be terrible. Or if they do a Die Hard 7 or 6 or whatever one now.
Which I think they're going to. Yeah.
The Passion of the Christ 2.
Can you imagine that? The Don, which is at Tartan Hulk. What's your top pick to play the new Han Solo in the prequel films? Anyone that you would really like to see? I know there's a few names being thrown around this week, hasn't there?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go the opposite. I'm going to go the one I don't want. There's a guy called Ansel Elgort who I cannot stand. He's in a lot of shitty teen films in America over the last couple of years, and I think he's one of the most bland, awful actors, and he's in that shortlist, apparently, and I'll be gutted if he gets it.
I'm just annoyed they're doing a Han Solo film.
I
love Han Solo, but Harrison Ford's the Don. Mm-hmm. Like, he's the dude, man. You can't have Han Solo without Harrison Ford.
I've seen Miles Teller being. I couldn't imagine him, but
he doesn't really have the presence, though.
No.
He's not good looking enough. You know, he's supposed to be a dashing young hero.
Ryan Gosling. Just make him look a bit younger.
One of the people that was mentioned a while back when they first announced it was Aaron Paul. Jesse from Breaking Bad, who, you know, I don't think he's much like Harrison Ford, but I just think he's a great screen presence. I would have liked him, but he's not in the shortlist.
The Don has also asked, what are your most overquoted movie lines?
I'll be back, probably. You hear that every every comedy show there's a reference to it, or Luke, I am your father. I mean, there's some people out there that still haven't seen Empire Strikes Back. Don't ruin it for them.
What's that one about this one time at band camp? Oh, shut up.
And any time you hear anyone trying to give a motivational speech and say, do or do not, there is no try. Christ.
You got any that you hate?
All of them.
All the big ones.
Philip Hander said, is there any movies that you've watched that you can't actually decide if they're genius or utter bollocks? You're just left on the fence going, I don't know if that was great or...
I think Tim and Eric the first time I saw it.
That's the exact thing. Tim and Eric, probably.
I think the very first time we watched The Room.
No, I think the first time we watched The Room, we all went, this is shite.
Yeah.
It's only with repeat viewings we've realised it's actually a work of genius.
And now I've got a tattoo of Tommy on my arse.
Adam... Have you got a tattoo of Tommy's arse on your arse? That's what you should have got.
That would be very, very harrowing. Adam Edwards, the last time you left a cinema and was absolutely blown away, it delivered more than you ever could have expected.
Even though this year, or last year I should say, I've seen several films that were better than this, I would say Mad Max. Yeah. That was the last time I left a cinema when all my senses had just been bombarded.
It was a visual spectacle as well as...
And an oral spectacle. Yeah. It was so loud and booming.
So Mad Max is a very good one.
Mm-hmm.
It was it was very kind of intense to view.
Yeah.
And a 2-hour car chase.
And what do we think about Mad Max doing so well in the Oscar nominations?
Absolutely brilliant. Really pleased that George Miller's been given some recognition for the direction of that film as well, as well as the film itself. I mean, to make that choice of going for practical effects, as we discussed on the episode, it's paid off. He's made a brilliant work of art, and it's rightfully nominated.
And it's amazing to think that he's been nominated previously for Happy Feet and Babe, and now he's being nominated for Mad Max.
It's curious, obviously, with the fact that it's not going to win.
Oh, I don't know.
It's not going to win, but it's nice that it's in there.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll do our, as we said, we'll do our full predictions in a couple of episodes' time.
I'm trying to think of the last time I left the... it sounds crazy, but The Guest. I didn't expect much. I was a guy from Downton Abbey. I can't think of it. I remember, obviously, it's quite a while ago now, but Drive. I remember coming out of the cinema just blown away. I was like, that was unbelievable. There's not been that much recently.
Even Star Wars, though, you know, because we went in... I think we kind of tempered our expectations, thinking this could be, you know, Jar Jar Binks all over again. But we all came out like...
Wow.
We have this rule when we go to the cinema together. for a film that we're going to review, where we come out the cinema in silence and we get in the car and we drive back to our respective homes without saying a word until we record. Star Wars is the only time in 30-odd episodes where we've broken that rule. We all came out of the cinema going, it was brilliant, it was brilliant. So I think that counts.
Yeah, you can't really top that, can you now?
No.
That was the first time, I think, where we put the fact that we're friends ahead of the fact that we podcast.
Big time. Yeah. Big time.
This one's coming first. Sarah Williams has said, is there a go-to film when you're feeling really, really low or poorly or have had some bad news that instantly makes you feel better? That kind of comfort blanket film.
I think it's Scott Pilgrim for me. Mm. I'm a big fan of it. It's a very kind of feel-good, crazy film. And I was thinking about this when I actually just watched it the other day. And I was thinking that I don't think Edgar Wright's ever going to do anything better than that.
Oh. Wow.
I think he's never going to get such a good cast together again. Oh. With such a good visual spectacle, with such good material.
Clearly, you've never seen The World's End.
Not. I think the issue is I have. I watched that, and then I had to watch Scott Pilgrim because I was feeling low and just disappointed.
I think for me, generally speaking, I think if I'm in that kind of mood, I tend to binge watch like a comedy show. I'll put like 30 Rock on or something. But film-wise, it's probably something like Happy Gilmore. Just a silly, funny film that can just lift my spirits.
It's all in the hips.
I don't want to say, but it's going to be big. I can't think of another one. It's my most watched film. I just put it on and I feel a kid again. Weird.
You feel a kid again? You've been warned about that.
Yeah, I shouldn't be saying that live on here.
Have you been directing Jeepers Creepers?
that's an old school reference. Nice.
Claire Winton has put, what did you think about the Cloverfield trailer that came from nowhere?
Great.
Yeah.
I was never a huge Cloverfield fan. I enjoyed the film. I thought it was good. I think I was just really happy about the fact that Hollywood had kept a secret from the internet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because it was known that JJ had a film that was coming out at some point. I think it was going by the name Valencia.
Yeah.
You know, which no one knew anything about. And now it turns out that it's a pseudo sequel or a blood relative, I think is the term he used, to Cloverfield. I'm cautiously optimistic because I love Cloverfield. I'm a real nerd for that film. I think it's absolutely brilliant. This one, I couldn't tell from when I watched the trailer and you see that it's got like Mary Elizabeth Winstead and John Goodman and some fella in this basement. I assume that was going to be like the opening act of the film and then they'd go out into the world. But I've gone on IMDb and they're the only three actors listed.
Whoa.
So unless IMDb, unless they're not even privy to the full scope of the film, which could be true. This could be how secretive it is. But if it turns out that it is entirely set in this basement, then I'm less interested. But we shall see.
It'd be interesting. I mean, it would make sense why no one knows anything about it if it was entirely set in a basement.
Oh, easily, yeah. You can keep that shit hidden.
Because you're not filming outdoors.
I'm really looking forward to seeing John Goodman again. I haven't seen him on film for a while.
Yeah.
Really? The Gambler.
But didn't see it.
I think the last thing I've seen him in was Argo.
Yeah.
And he was great in that.
Red State.
Shame.
The Mad Daddy. Now, I don't know how we take this. He just put, question for you guys, creamy or chunky?
If he's talking about peanut butter, it's chunky all the way.
He could be talking about Kit Kats, because they do a Kit Kat chunky, don't they?
And the Kit Kat creamy. That sounds like something you find in the Urban Dictionary.
I'm going to answer creamy, but I don't know what context. So I'll just say, just always creamy.
Yeah, that's true, actually. If it's like a latte, a chunky latte.
You might be on about what type of poos you like.
It could be.
Well, I don't know about you fellas, but my favourite poo is... Who has a favourite poo?
I think you should probably write in and explain that one a bit more so we can answer it properly.
Last question from the competition winner, Scott Higgins. Now, this is one you might want to bring back, and it's not movies, it's more TV.
Was the competition to get a question ready?
Yeah. He won the T-shirt, and he's a fair place, but on Instagram.
It
looks great.
He loves it.
Yeah.
Quite right, too. Yeah. It looks awesome.
Cheers, Scott.
Your top 5 TV shows of all time. Let's bring that back.
No, let's not bring it back, because this isn't a TV podcast. Let's do it now.
You want to do it right now?
Yeah, why not? Hell, let's go
for it. Wow, ever?
Yeah, right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go for it. Shit.
He knows it. Look.
Number 1, Breaking Bad.
Yeah, nice. I agree.
Number 2, a show that I've just rewatched in the last couple of weeks when I was off work, The Wire.
Wow.
Number 3, Mad Men. Number 4, Lost. Number 5, Sopranos. Now, I've gone all drama there. I've specifically stuck with drama. I've got dozens of comedies I love, but they're my dramas.
I think he's had this conversation.
I'm not happy with the list. No, I'm not happy with the list already, because I've not put the shield in there.
Or Hannibal.
Well, no, that wouldn't make the list.
I can't... Oh, my God. I'm going to put Twin Peaks up there.
Mm-hmm.
The X-Files for the first 5 series.
Well, as soon as Doggett and Reyes come in.
Oh, my God, gone. Yeah. Sopranos. Breaking Bad. Ugh, God, it's impossible. And The American Office. Because yep. I go to it and it's that film. It's beautiful.
Breaking Bad has to be in there. It's an absolute masterpiece of a TV series. Follow it up with a British comedy, Father Ted.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely love it.
Never seen it.
Ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous.
It annoys me every time you tell me that.
The UK Office, I'm going to put that in there as well, because I can watch that on repeat.
Extras.
No, I'm not just going to sit there doing every single Ricky Gervais comedy. Death Note.
Great show. Yeah.
For sure. That's got to be in there. So Breaking Bad, Father Ted, UK Office, Death Note, and it's got to be something I always go back to. It has to
probably
be.
Boxing, right?
Buffy.
Ah, you see, I did like that.
Yeah.
I watched it all again recently. I don't think I have it in my top five, though.
So this is why I said we should come back. It's tough. Pick it now.
Well, Ben's already unhappy with his list, isn't he? He did it about 5 minutes ago.
Because I wouldn't have had The Wire in my five. I would have had The Shield. But now that I just rewatched The Wire and remember how amazing... Again, get out of my house.
I'm going to go with Sherlock.
Okay.
Never seen it.
It's really good.
Get out of your own house. Keep your questions coming in. Go on www.skiptheend.co.uk because all the links are on there and we'll answer everything. We've should be proved like smooth or creamy or buttery or whatever it was. Crunchy or silky. What was it?
Please elaborate what you mean as well by that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. Is that the first one of the new year or the second one?
Second.
Oh, it's flying by, isn't it? It's flying by. It'll nearly be Christmas.
37 in a row.
Pretty good. If you can't tell that we record these a bit early than normal, Ben's just going to prove that there. Is this the first one or the second one?
So what do we got coming up next time around? Mark, tell them what's going to be the film we're going to review.
Spotlight,
which is a big, big Oscar player. It's been nominated for Best Film, Best Director, Best Screenplay. Two of the actors are nominated.
A very serious film for us to review. Very serious.
Yeah, but again, it's another film about journalistic investigation. We've already talked about Zodiac, so I'm really, really intrigued by this one. Looking forward to that one a lot. And Adam, what is our topic?
We're going to be talking about our top three on-screen partnerships.
Which is going to be brilliant. That's going to take a lot of thought, isn't it? What year are we skipping back to?
1992. So close now.
Edging close to the 80s.
Imagine you guys just quit after that. Like, get to 1989. Gone.
Suck it off.
At the end of 1990, yeah. We just go, right, we're done with this now.
New feature.
Speaking of features, we've got the final round of our highly popular quiz show. Lost in Translation.
Which Ben has already won.
Which I've already won, so it's a dead rubber, as they call it. So it's Mark versus Adam in the final round.
The rewatch as well, Adam. Tell us what it is.
We're going to be watching... Jimmy.
Oh, I don't know why I'm laughing, because I'm furious. Don't have to see
this. The multi-award winning Jimmy.
We've had so many tweets of people saying, I'm so relieved you guys are now doing good films again. It's great. Sorry, Lord. Guys.
Whose choice is it next time? Oh, it's Adam's. Adam, you can pull it back around. You can pick a big film.
No, I've got to get Mark back for this.
He's going to pick Jersey Girl.
Mark would love that.
So, yeah, let's leave it there then, lads. So... Thanks a lot for listening, guys. See you next time. Though nothing